like to eat? Can you answer me that?
Wendy, I eat nearly every day. Sometimes I'll eat twice a day.
We are going to talk eating and food because that's what we all do. We all have to do it. And Michael Pollan is on the line with us. The Omnivore's Dilemma, Natural History of Four Meals. This is the 10th anniversary edition with a new foreword by you, correct, Michael?
Yes. Yes. Hi, Wendy. Hi, Bill.
Hi.
All right. So explain this to what you do with this thing. You visit a cornfield. You're talking about a sustainable farm in Virginia. You buy a steer bound for the meat aisle and traces a bag of pre-washed organic greens to California. Now, we all eat without thinking about what we're eating. Is that the point of this book?
Well, that is the point, yeah. I mean, you know, most of us don't give a thought or didn't used to give a thought to how was that meat produced in our hamburger and where do those French fries come from. But beginning about, I don't know, 15 years ago, people became curious. We'd had these food safety problems. People were getting sick from eating fast food, and there was mad cow disease. And suddenly we began taking this look at the food system. And for me, I realized early in the 2000s that I didn't know how my food was being produced, and I got curious. And so the book is really a series of detective stories tracing very common meals, like a McDonald's meal, back to the source. And what I found was astounding and upsetting in some ways, but I also found some very encouraging things as well.
Why did you decide to trace McDonald's, Michael? Most of your food is a little bit more on the higher end, but why McDonald's? Why would you go that route?
Well, at the time, I was eating McDonald's food. My son was a big fast food eater, and so we spent time in McDonald's. So I started to wonder, how do they make those burgers so cheap? How do you sell a burger for a buck? And the sodas, and what are the sodas made of? Where's the sweetener come from? And the stunning thing about the McDonald's meal, and this goes for any fast food meal, is that you keep finding yourself, as you go back to the farm, on the same farm. It's a cornfield. And that corn is the basis of that industrial food chain, so that all those weird ingredients besides the chicken and the chicken nugget are corn-based. The sweetener in the soda is high fructose corn syrup, and all the meat is corn-fed meat. So in a way, it looks like a lot of different foods, but it's all one food. It's corn. And that was kind of shocking to me. I didn't realize that the foundation of our whole food industrial food system was so narrow.
And, you know, like, there's some Mirai corn that we get brought to the station, and I pick it up at farmers markets. Other than that, I don't even really like corn. So it's weird that almost everything I eat or drink contains corn.
Well, the kind of corn we're eating is not sweet corn, and it's number two field corn, which if you've ever tried it, and I did, and you've got plenty of cornfields near you in Chicago,
yeah.
It's not edible. It's hard, and it's starchy, and it really is an industrial raw material, not actually a food. Nobody eats it. You know, you can grind it into cornmeal and make corn chips or tortillas, but aside from that, it's got to pass through an animal or a factory to be turned into food.
Okay, that's a lovely thought. I'm kind of scared to read your book. I was picking it up and looking through it, and I thought, we're at that age with younger kids and the value meal, so we're hitting McDonald's a lot. Scared to go to Chipotle now, quite honestly, because all the problems they've had, and I don't know if they're ever going to be able to rebound from that.
Yeah, it's very sad to see what happened at Chipotle, especially because they were making an effort to source their meat in a more sustainable way, and they were supporting a lot of local farmers. We still don't know exactly what happened. It may be, though, that if you're going to actually cook fresh food on site, which they tried to do, and very few fast food companies do, then you've got to pay a living wage so you can have workers who can be well-trained and stick around for a while. I mean, maybe that was the problem. But we don't know for sure.
Right.
It's hard to make conclusions. And I don't want to speculate, although I just did.
Oh,
that's what we do every day.
But, you know, I mean, it's people are afraid to eat now, and I think that that's really a shame because we do have really good alternatives out there. I mean, one of the things that's happened in the last 10 years is we've had this explosive growth in what I think of as the alternative food economy. We're starting to have fast food chains that are, you know, that have healthy, sustainable food, and we'll see more of those in the next few years. Farmers markets are in now 8,000. There are 8,000 of them. There are in the supermarket you can find grass-fed beef and pastured eggs and chicken. So it's, you know, we shouldn't be afraid to eat. We should just make an effort to find better food, especially if we have young kids, by the way. That's
yeah,
what matters
I know.
Most, because their bodies are being built and they're more susceptible to the impact of pesticides than we are. And, you know, we're already loaded with these things, but kids still, their brain development is happening and their hormonal development is happening. So it's a time. That's when the investment in things like organic food are pay off the most, I think, with the young children.
Michael, you mentioned that there are now more fast food alternatives to the old standbys. Are you familiar with a chain called Life Kitchen at all?
You know, I've heard of it, and I've never eaten at one. I've heard good things about it, though.
Is that
in Chicago?
Yeah, we have them here in Chicago now, fairly recently, over the last, I guess, year and a half or 2 years. But this was an executive at one of the other fast food companies who said straight out, and I met him. He said he felt guilty. He said he worked at another fast food place, and after years and years of selling product that he himself considered substandard, he said, I need to do something in the opposite direction. So now he has these, and he said it's exactly what you said, a healthier alternative to fast food.
And I think we're going to see more of those. I've just been living in Boston, Cambridge area for the year, and there's a chain called Clover there that does, you know, very healthy food. And there's Amy's, you know, who make the frozen burritos and pizza.
Yeah.
They've started a fast food concept in Northern California. There's no reason we couldn't do it. It has special challenges. Obviously, you need a more trained workforce, and sourcing sustainable food it's more expensive and more challenging. But it seems to me that if the consumer wants it, and it is increasingly clear that the consumer is looking for an alternative, food that they can feel good about feeding to their kids, American industry and ingenuity will supply it.
I feel bad saying this, but, you know, we go grocery shopping once a week. Sometimes we add some supplements a couple times during the week. But when you go get the fresh, good stuff, like berries, I love berries. So the blueberries, the strawberries, you can find them on sale, but it's really expensive. And a lot of these fast food places, when you're working late and you're running home to get something, it's cheap and it's fast. And I feel if we had good food that was cheap and fast, we'd all make better decisions.
I think that that's true. And I think that we've also been lulled into this state where we expect food to be dirt cheap. I mean, you know, we're happy to spend it on. I mean, look what we spend money on now. We now have another, like, $150 phone bill we never had. We now pay $150 a month for television. All this stuff. Television used to be free.
Yeah.
And
water. You're paying for water in your home now. That never. When
yeah.
I was a kid, no one paid for water in their house.
Why are we willing to pony up for these things, but we still feel entitled to food that can only be produced in the least sustainable way to hit the price target we're insisting? I mean, I actually think those of us who can afford to spend more money on food should try to, because the system that makes it cheap is not a pretty one, and it involves a lot of exploitation, both of workers and animals, and not to mention all the cost to the environment. So I make an effort, and I know I get caught up. My wife is always, I'm complaining about the prices at the farmer's market, and she comes back with one of my food rules, which is pay more, eat less.
Not a bad rule.
It's a great rule. Michael Pollan on the line with us, The Omnivore's Dilemma. It's the 10th anniversary edition. You can pick it up where better books are sold. You can get it on Amazon. And you can also, you're on Netflix with your Cooked documentary series, correct?
Yeah, I've got a series on about my most recent book, Cooked, which is looking at the whole role of cooking in this situation. I mean, one of the reasons that we've industrialized our agriculture is because we were outsourcing cooking to McDonald's and Burger King and all these companies. And when they start doing the cooking for us, they support a very different kind of agriculture than we do. And so I make the case that a revival of home cooking is the best thing you could do for the environment, but also for your health. You know, the best predictor of a healthy diet is not income level, as you might think. It's whether it was cooked by a human being.
You know, it's so true, resorting to junk food frequently. Even if you cook a hamburger at home and make a salad with it, it's completely different and healthier to do that than go run out and grab it from a drive-thru.
It's tastier. You know,
it is really better.
A really terrible cook, it's going to taste a lot better because you're going to use higher quality meat than they do, without question. I mean, when we cook at home, you know, we buy the best quality ingredients we can afford, and we tend to cook them pretty simply because we don't have a lot of time. And that is the essence of a healthy diet.
Michael, most grocery stores in the produce section have an organic section. Is that worth it? Sometimes you pay twice as much for an organic fruit or vegetable. Is it worth it or not?
In my view, most of the time it is worth it. It depends, obviously, on your, you know, can you afford it? But it does mean that the food is grown with, it will have less pesticide residue in it. It was grown in a way that treated the land better and that the workers were not exposed to, you know, toxic chemicals. But if you have young kids, keeping those pesticides out of their diet, I think, is a very high priority. And if you're a nursing mother, you know, the baby's blood-brain barrier doesn't really kick in till 6 months old. So any chemicals that you're eating are ending up in your baby's brain. And so there is a period at which I think organic food is very important. For the rest of us, some foods are produced with a lot of pesticide, and buying organic makes sense. I'm thinking of strawberries and apples and peaches and things like that. Other foods, like bananas, for example, which you peel, it doesn't matter as much. You're not going to get as much of that pesticide. So there's, if you go online and look for the Dirty Dozen list, it'll tell you which are the 12 organic foods that are the best value, because if you don't get organic, you're going to be exposed to a lot of pesticide.
And I'm thinking about just all the strawberries I just washed the other day. You rinse them off in a colander, and that's it. You're not really scrubbing them, so you're not really getting a lot of that pesticide off of them.
No, probably not. I mean, it's better than nothing, and obviously you're not going to peel a strawberry. But, you know, that's when I buy organic, when I buy strawberries. And frankly, organic strawberries are not that much more. I mean, they can grow them pretty efficiently in California now. They figured out how to do it. So I do spend more money on organic. But the reasons are not just about my health. I mean, it's really the environmental case for organic is very strong. Healthy soils, you know, are really important. And I just want to support those values when I can. You know, we have this wonderful opportunity. We get to vote with our forks three times a day. And let's vote for the food system we want to see. And millions of people are doing that. And that's what's thrilling about the last 10 years, is to see the growth in the number of people conscious about their food choices. And I'm telling you, the industry is hearing it, and they're beginning to move.
Michael Pollan is his name. You have officially made me feel guilty. The Omnivore's Dilemma, I will be reading it, because when I was pregnant, when I was breastfeeding, I was so careful with every tiny thing I put in my mouth. When my babies were little, I was really good at that, and now I don't care anymore. So
Wendy was eating plastic before we started talking to you, Michael.
I hope the book inspires
it. Will.
It makes you feel guilty.
You already have. Thanks for that, Michael. We appreciate it. Michael Pollan, The Omnivore's Dilemma, and check out Cooked on Netflix. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you both.
Take care, Michael. All right, we need to take a quick break, and then more show, Bill and Wendy, WGN.